The views expressed on the following broadcasts do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
God is a solution. God is a 12-step.
I like where he's going here.
Helps the community grow, helps us grow. Bonnie has done a phenomenal job. And you're talking about taking people through a spiritual process and getting them into recovery.
Thanks, Monty, and thanks for all your support.
We need spirituality to make this thing work long-term.
It's an absolute pleasure. You certainly know a lot of people.
This is one of the places that is about the business of the solution.
Here we go.
And now, broadcasting on location somewhere in the vast expanse of the Pacific Northwest, it's the over-opinionated 12-stepologist, the Monty Man.
That's right. Come on aboard. Well, welcome aboard, one and all, to another fine episode of the Take 12 Recovery Radio Show. We are the oldest and the original recovery talk and recovery music radio station and podcast, broadcasting to you via the internet. Our website address is take12radio.com. You can use the number 12 or spell the word out if you like. I hope that's not too many choices for you alcoholics and addicts out there, but we're glad you're with us. We have a great guest on today. She has been on before. The book, Chem-Free Sobriety, is a book you really want to get. You can go back in the archives and you can find that show. Our guest this week is Suzanne Thistle, and we're going to be talking to her in just a minute. But, of course, before that, Roger's with us. Hi, Roger.
Hello, everyone. Hello, Suzanne.
And there's Suzanne.
Hello.
And here, what's that, Roger? What is that?
That's Black Rifle Coffee, by golly, Monty.
That's right, Black Rifle
that
Coffee.
That you're drinking.
Yes.
Yes, and they're not paying you to say that.
They're not paying us to say it. And why is that, Roger?
Because you like it so much, Monty.
That's because I like it so much. This is coffee that is grown and brewed by veterans for Americans. And it is amazing stuff. It just isn't any old coffee. It is phenomenal coffee. Let me just say that. And these guys, these are all veterans. These are all wounded warriors. These guys are dedicated to bringing you the best coffee in the world. BlackRifleCoffee.com. Join the coffee club like I have. And you don't have to worry about anything. It just shows up at your door. There you go. Roger, have you bought any of that stuff yet?
I knew you were going to ask me that, Monty, and I said to myself, self, I need to buy some Black Rifle Coffee and join the coffee club. I have not, but I will.
Okay, we'll check back with you next week and see how you do. All righty, and listen, there was something else I was going to tell you about, but I'm going to wait because I can't wait for this. Our guest this week is Suzanne Thistle. Now, Suzanne is a licensed alcohol and drug counselor with over two decades of professional experience, including individual counseling, clinic management, both clinical and executive director of two agencies. She teaches about alcohol and drugs at a local university and has authored three books. Her first book, Chem-Free Sobriety, which I mentioned earlier, became a number one new release bestseller on Amazon in April and May of 2020. And her third book, Parents, Addicted, Children, and Hope, hit the number two new release bestseller list in March of this year. Her book, God is in the Addict, is dedicated to people in their first 90 days of recovery and has also seen great successes. Suzanne received the Treatment Agency of the Year, Legislative Advocacy and Lifetime Advocacy awards from her colleagues in the addiction profession. She spends most of her time teaching, consulting, and writing about addiction. But when she's not working, she loves to be with her family, bike riding, hiking, and enjoying Newfound Lake. Welcome to the show again, Suzanne.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Yeah, yeah. So you're just kind of a writing machine, aren't you? Three books under your belt.
I think I'm a glutton for punishment is what it is. It's a lot of work. Even, you know, they're, oh gosh, 120 pages for the two of them. The Chem-Free Sobriety was like 400 pages.
Yeah, that was a big one.
It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work, but I enjoy getting the message out.
So before we talk about the content of this thing, I'm just curious because I have some manuscripts that I've been working on, and I don't know if it'll ever turn into a book or not. I've had people tell me a million times, you know, you need to write a book, you need to write a book. I know it's much easier to get them published these days with self-publishing, you know, out there with help from Amazon and that kind of thing, although it's, I don't know much about it. But it's quite the process, right? I mean, you got to do it. Everything's got to fit right. Do you have an editor? Or do you do that yourself?
No. Well, I edit and edit and edit. I have to read it over and over and over and over and over again.
Yeah.
And I have other people read it too and get their remarks. But I also hire an editor. The first book, I hired three different editors. And here's the problem. Sometimes you can hire editors and still find mistakes.
Oh, wow.
So, wow. Yeah. So checking it after the editor edits it is important. And, you know, today I look at some of the books out there, some of the, you know, all-time bestsellers, and there's still mistakes. I'm like, well, I don't feel so bad, you know.
There you go. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, before we talk about this one, because I enjoyed Chem-Free Sobriety so much, can you talk just a little bit about Chem-Free Sobriety?
Sure. Usually when I have to have passion, I have to be motivated to write a book, right?
Yeah.
So that particular book, and part of why those three are self-published, the next one I write isn't as urgent to get out there. It's a daily devotional. It's a Christian daily devotional.
Uh-huh.
So I don't feel like it's as urgent to get out there. But when I wrote Chem-Free Sobriety, I was pissed off. Let's face it. I was mad that all the money that was coming in to New Hampshire anyways was coming, it was for medication. And so even still right now, and I, as you can see from the awards that I received, I'm very much involved with the legislature.
Yeah.
Because they're the ones making the rules, you know, they're right. The ones passing the bills that turn into laws. And so, you know, with this, where we are right now, it used to be, if you look at statistics back in the 90s, I think it was in New Hampshire anyways, we only had 40 overdoses, and only is a terrible word to use, but now we have almost 400. It might even be more than that for 2022. We don't have the stats, but
you're talking about yearly, right?
You know, they're saying, well, they need more medication. Yeah. Just 2022 was over 400. It's somewhere around 400. But in the 1999, I think it was only 40. So someone might say, well, you didn't have Suboxone and methadone. We have methadone. Methadone came in, and every year they're giving more people Suboxone, methadone. And so what's happened is the pendulum has swung the other way.
Yeah.
Instead of abstinence, we're now, the very first thing, of course, the gold standard is we medicate people, right?
Right.
And what they're telling people is if you don't get medicated, you'll die. Because, you know, if you remain abstinent for a while and then you go back out, chances are you'll die. And so And I don't think people understand that who's paying for those studies. In order for medication to be approved, the pharmaceutical company has to pay for the research, and then they have the right to alter it at the end. So, you know, all these people, well, this research that says it's the best thing ever. Well, that's not the case. It is not the gold standard. The gold standard is complete freedom, right?
That's right.
I don't have to take that's something right. every day. And so when this all, and it just, my gut told me this is not right and I need to prove it.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
So I had to, I said, I'm going to interview 101 people all over the state of New Hampshire. I didn't want to get it in one, you know, like I could probably do that right in the area that I'm in, but I said, I'll go all over New Hampshire. And that way they can't say, well, it's just from your area. So it took me about a year, a little over a year to interview all these people and put all their stories into writing. And 5% of proceeds from that particular book go to recovery in New Hampshire. And what I found was people who read this book are really liking it and they want it. So that's what I've been using for the 5%, giving away that book. I've given away almost as much as I've sold. So so anyways, I know that's a lot to answer your question. But,
yeah, well, I'm glad you did.
It's an excellent book.
Yes, it is.
It's an excellent book. And there's a bunch of different people, different types of sobriety. It's not just 12-step. There's
sure.
other types of recovery, but not medicated.
Right, right. And the thing is, and somebody may be listening right now, oh, she's anti-medicine. She's anti-Matt, you know. And that's actually not true, is it? I mean, you agree that there is a place for this stuff, but that it's been misplaced, really. It shouldn't be the first thing that we
Everybody's
go to.
Everybody's medicated.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I have seen...
I mean, you've got 19-year-olds.
Yeah.
19-year-olds who are being told you got to be on this for life, methadone.
12-year-olds, 14-year-olds. You know, sticking them on Adderall. And I mean, it's just...
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a place for medication. There absolutely is. And sometimes there is a place for medication for a lifetime, depending on what a person's going through. But, man, we're just – and you know, one thing I've learned is that my general practitioner knows very little when it comes to the area of addiction, but my pharmacist knows way more.
Right.
And
oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, listen. Parents, addicted children, and hope. There are people listening right now, and because I've told a lot of parents to tune into this show, parents that are struggling with children that are either out there or they suspect they're going to be soon or whatever. And a lot of them are really beginning to wonder if there is hope, you know.
There is hope,
you know, and so it's really our job to help rekindle that fire. Right.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you wrote this book.
I brought this book.
There it is. There it is. Da-da-da. There's two of them. Yay. Parents.
Oh, you got them.
Yeah. Parents. Yay, we're doing a little dance. Parents, addicted children, and hope, global tools for proactive parents. I'm telling you, mom and dad, I'm telling you, grandma and grandpa, Uncle Joe and Aunt Betty, whoever you are, right, that while somebody is still sucking air, there is still hope. There is still hope. And I know you feel like there isn't. I know you feel like you are at the end of the end. Do not throw in the towel. We never, never, never give in to the addict. We just do not. And this book, folks, it's a short book. It's an easy read. And I'm telling you, if you're feeling hopeless, you really need to get this book. So why did you write this book?
I was pissed off again.
You were pissed off again.
I was.
I love it.
You like that. I like pissed
I'm
off.
I'm sorry to say.
Yeah. That's great.
But, you know, most of the people that are dying are between 18 and 35, something like that.
Yeah.
But we're also seeing a huge increase in teenagers. And what I know from having, if you look at all the people in chem-free sobriety, most of them started in their teens, you know?
Yes.
So, again, in New Hampshire, I don't even know if they opened a teen facility at one point and then they closed it. And then I was talking to a doc in Massachusetts. She says, we don't want kids to go to rehab. Well, you know, it could be what saves their life. So with this particular book, I had to do a lot of research. Mm-hmm. I would work with the family as they related to the client. So I would work with the person who had a substance use disorder. But I would talk with parents and family members all the time. And I'd sometimes walk away from that call and just cry, you know, because
yeah.
They don't know what to do. They have no idea what to do, where to start, how to make things better. There, a lot of them, it was, how do we control them, you know?
Yeah.
Make them
yeah, there it is.
And then you have the other side, you may hear with 12-step meetings, well, they got to be ready. Well, no, they don't have to be ready. We
That's
can
right.
help them get ready, you know? So...
Let me interject right there really quick.
So I knew I needed...
Let me yes. interject really quick. Because that is a real... That's a big one with me. If they're not ready, they're not going to get it. They have to hit bottom to get it.
Right.
You know, well, first of all, we can help raise right. that bottom, you know, but they got to exactly. want to be there. I don't know anybody that woke up and said, you know what? I really, really want to go to the AA meeting today. I really, really do. I really, really want to go to treatment. Right. I'm so excited about going to treatment.
Right.
You know, no, that's not the case at all.
Right.
And if you are a parent and you think, and you've been told that they've got to want it to get it, they may die before they want it. Right, Suzanne?
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, thank you.
Exactly.
That, don't get me going on that one. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah,
sorry.
It always makes me frustrated. No, it always makes me frustrated too, because, gosh, you know, my father did that with me. When she's ready, she'll, you know,
right.
I could have saved some years. I mean, shoulda, woulda, coulda. I mean, but still. So I decided that I needed to go beyond New Hampshire. So I looked at all the places I could worldwide to find out what are they doing, you know,
mm-hmm.
and some of that information is in here under support and treatment. But I was blown away to see how many parent support groups are available online on Facebook. I mean, the ones that I have in here. So this is like a handbook.
Mm-hmm.
It in the back of the book has a lot of information. Somebody said, well, can you do an audio book with this? I don't think I will, only because, you know, it's a lot of HTTP, you know, email addresses or webpage addresses
right.
where people can go to. Yeah. So, but Facebook, oh my gosh, there are thousands of people, parents, joining Facebook groups,
mm-hmm.
which is really cool that they're reaching out. So anyways, I looked at New Zealand, Australia, England. I tried to get in touch with Spain. That was kind of difficult. But all over the world, where can I... You know, where is there information that's different than what we have here? And so some of that is in there. I'm really impressed by the SMART program. I think a lot of people use that. What is it? Families. Smart Recovery for Families.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a spiritual group, but they use the craft. Don't ask me what that is off the top of my head. But it's a program designed to move things forward. And there's others, but that's one of the ones I was really impressed with. And I also knew that I needed to talk to people in recovery. So I have quotes throughout the book of people who I said, what do you wish your parents knew? You know, people mm-hmm. that are sober today.
Right.
What do you wish your parents knew? And so those quotes are in there. There's a couple of people who wrote things about, you know, I think there's a therapist in the beginning who wrote about, she's a social worker, so she wrote about some stats. But anyways, it just got me motivated when I started hearing that the numbers were going, you know, for who was dying of overdoses were really hitting our teens. I needed to make sure that we had something that we could use to help parents and to let them know that they can do things
yeah.
to change the way their child is behaving. So
one of the quotes in the
long way of answering your question.
One of the quotes in the book is, my alcoholism became active in high school. I wish my parents' love could have reached past their denial. They couldn't bear the weight of admitting I was that sick. That was actually my quote. And you included my quote in yes. your book, which I really appreciated. But that's in reading your book and then reading my own quote again, I wish my parents' love could have reached past their denial. Yeah, that is such a powerful statement for anybody to make. Do you find that a lot of people in recovery, or perhaps even people that aren't, that should be, really wish their parents knew how bad it got?
Yeah. Well, I think most people wish that their parents would do something.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That they wouldn't just, you know, say, well, they'll come and when they're ready, or they wouldn't try and control them, but they would, you know, Tony Trimmingham, I think he's in, I want to say Australia or New Zealand. I have some information from both countries, but I asked him, and it's in Under Support and Treatment. He talks about, because I said to him, what do you hear from kids about their parents? And he said, let's see,
give me the page number.
That's not him. Yeah, I'll try to. Okay, let's see. Family Drug Support, I believe. Yeah, so page 96. When I asked Tony what he thought children would say about their parents' care, he stated some would say, I want my family to never give up on me, or they are too controlling. He wrote a book called Not My Family, Never My Child. I believe he lost his child to addiction.
Mm.
But so they don't want, and someone else who did, I copied a quote, I believe, said something to the same effect, you know, I don't want my parents to give up on me.
Yeah.
You know? Because too many times I think parents make that person the problem instead of, you know, well,
yeah, sure.
If they only did this, or there's something wrong with them. They're a bad kid and they're never going to get sober.
You're just like your grandpa.
It blows my mind when I hear people say, wow.
Yeah. You're just like your dad.
They're useless. You know, that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Not okay.
Okay, we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, I want to ask your opinion about the connection theory, and otherwise more commonly known as Rat Park. And then I want to talk about intervention a little bit and what you cover in that as well. Folks, in the back of the book, there's some great podcasts that are listed here for parental support and suggested reading. I mean, there really is the thing that's beautiful about our world today and technology is there really is an endless supply of resources that will help you more than what most people think. And so do not give up. Okay, we'll be right back right after this with our guest, Suzanne Thistle. And we'll hear a little bit from Roger McDermott as well. So don't go away. Check it out.
Hey, this is Ricky Bird, and you are listening to Monty Man on Take 12 Recovery Radio.
So you're thinking about a home remodel, and you don't know where to start. Well, may I suggest Gregory S. Robinson Construction. Not only is he your starting point, but he will finish the job with the kind, friendly, and professional manner you as a homeowner deserves. Specializing in interior remodel, siding, and porch coverings, Gregory S. Robinson Construction wants to help you make your house the home that you deserve. For a free estimate, call 541-279-5418. That's 541-279-5418. Gregory S. Robinson Construction. Construction is in his DNA. CCB number 229113.
Hey, check it out. You can now access all of our shows from a variety of podcasting platforms, including Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, YouTube, Podomatic, and Player FM. Simply search for Take 12 Recovery Radio, and you'll be tuned into the best in recovery broadcast journalism. Also available at take12radio.com.
Hey, you! Yeah, you! Summer's coming, and with it comes Recovery in the Park! Tuesday, July 11th from 5 to 9 p.m. at beautiful Bryant Park, Albany, Oregon. Live music, community resource fair, giveaways, a special designated area for the kiddos, cardboard testimonies, and a free barbecue dinner! Come rub shoulders with the Albany Recovery community at this free event. Recovery in the Park. Mark your calendars for Tuesday, July 11th.
Darker shame, darling. Thank you for all the joy and pain. Picture show.
Hey, this is Tommy Holmes, and you're listening to Take12Radio.com. Recovery talk and positive music with the Monty Man.
Second seat, Gold Dutch Street, you were sweet.
You know, every time I hear that song, that's Wayne Newton, by the way. Every time I hear that song, I see Ferris Bueller standing on a parade float. That's one of my favorite movies. And I have to say, you know, we did lose Tina Turner last week, and that's why we opened with her singing at the very beginning of the show. Talk about somebody that went through hell and back. Just a little piece of trivia. I don't know how many people know this. Roger, you may. But when she separated from Ike Turner, right, she lost everything. And Rod Stewart and Mick Jagger stepped up to the plate, and if it wasn't for those two, she would not have been able to get back on the horse and continue and be successful as she was. They came in and rescued her financially, emotionally. I mean, it was something else. You know what I mean? And what a loss to the music industry, Tina Turner dying at 83. But I got to tell you, what just crushes my heart is when we lose kids that we don't have to lose. And listeners, if you're a parent, a grandparent, a family member, and you're just about giving up, don't. Please do not. I would encourage you to get this book, Parents, Addicted Children, and Hope. by our guest, Suzanne Thistle. Roger, let me ask you, as a child growing up, did addiction in any form, as far as particularly, let's say, substances, did you rub shoulders with that at a very young age at all?
Virtually none at all.
Virtually none at all. What about your friends?
No. So I grew up, you know, I was born in 52. So I grew up in the 60s, the late 50s and 60s. And my parents weren't alcoholics. My two older brothers weren't alcoholics. I grew up, because my brothers were 10 and 12 years older, I grew up around college kids, college men and women.
Yeah.
And I didn't even see alcoholism rampant, really. So it wasn't in my world. It wasn't in my world.
How did it get in your world then?
I began drinking it. What happened to me is at my brother's wedding when I was 15 years old, I was in the wedding party and had a champagne for the toast.
Yeah.
And to this day, 55 years later, I can tell you I know exactly how it felt.
Uh-huh.
And it created, I didn't really know it then, but it created, I want more of that. I played a lot of sports in high school. So even though I had some blackouts in high school, it didn't get me. It progressed slowly, but it took off in college. And then finally, when I got married and got into sales, it began to progress rapidly.
Right.
And I knew nothing about alcoholism. I knew nothing about an alcoholic. I knew nothing about anything. And so I was grateful when God kept sending me to AA, starting in 87, second time 92, until finally I was done. And my life began to change when I began to want to change.
So in chapter 2 of Suzanne's book, entitled Theories, there's a number of them in here. And one of them that I wanted to touch on, primarily because this is where I get controversial, I don't agree with this one. And the reason I don't, I'm not saying it's not valid. It's just that it hasn't been my experience. Let's put it that way. I should probably say that. Yeah. It hasn't been my experience. And it, this connection theory doesn't sound like it was Roger's experience either. Cause it sounds like he grew up in a good environment. He was around a good environment. And yet he still, when he put alcohol in his body, something happened to him that doesn't happen in the normal temperate drinker, and which tells me that it was genetic, more than likely, and not environmental. But in connection, the connection theory, in a nutshell, is the Rat Park example, and a lot of people have heard that one, and where you introduce heroin to rats that are in a negative environment versus introducing it to rats that are in a positive environment. And what happens to the ones in the positive environment? They don't go for it. They hang out with the good guys, kind of thing. What's your take on the Rat Park thing, Suzanne? I'm just curious.
I think there's a place for all of this. Mm-hmm. We do know when people get sober, having a community of people is extremely helpful to kind of gear them and guide them. And that's why I put those three different, there's others too.
Oh, I'm glad you did though. I am.
But yeah, because even though I'm saying, you know, some people say, well, I have this disease. Well, not everybody thinks it's a disease. You know, some people think it's a learned behavior. Mm-hmm. So I just kind of put them in there to let people know that there are different theories behind what's going on with their child. And I do see that, you know, we're told by many people that, you know, not to hang out with people who drink or use.
Sure.
Norcoff, Dr. Norcoff. She is the head of National Health Institute, I guess, or something like that. No, a drug, some drug thing. What is the name of it? I'm not going to get it right.
That's okay.
She does a lot of drug experiments. And she did one where, so we know that when you take in a drug, they increase dopamine or some other neurotransmitter, right?
Yeah.
So actually just seeing it can do that. So being around
that's
it
right.
and people that are using, your likelihood could go up, right?
According
to her study.
Mm-hmm.
So so I can see, you know, Dr. Alexander, that theory, a lot of people are really looking at that more now than they had in the past.
They are.
The learned, here's the thing, if it's a medical, if it's a disease, a medical illness, then doctors are able to treat it, right?
Yeah.
So, and we can charge health insurance companies, right?
Right.
So the health insurance companies are involved. And so, I think it's interesting because I think there's many different ways that people interpret it and interpret how somebody becomes an alcoholic. Now, genetics, it was funny because I teach at the college and one time I was talking about it being genetic and this kid said, well, they've proven it not to be genetic. And I'm like, holy crap, why didn't I know that? So
was that alcoholism you were
so
talking
I'm
about?
So I'm not, you know.
Was that alcoholism?
That it may not be genetic.
It was alcoholism, not narcotic addiction?
Alcohol. I can't remember. Gosh, it was quite a few years ago. But, you know, and it's interesting. We don't. That's like the study for, you know, they did a long-term study in like, I don't know, 39 countries with thousands of people over years, mm-hmm. years and years and years. And what they came up with was there's no amount of alcohol that's okay. That study is buried. But that was probably wow. one of the biggest studies ever done on alcoholism.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, sometimes we hear you got to follow the money.
Yeah, that's sad, but true.
Whoever's coming up with the most.
Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
I hate to say it.
I'm going to, you know, so I'm just going to tell you what my take on this is, and then we'll move on from here.
Okay.
Personally, I think as I'm kind of rethinking this just now, I have to remind myself on the Rat Park story, we're talking about heroin. We're not talking about alcohol. And if you are one of the opinion that alcoholism, you either have it or you don't, you know, you can't develop alcoholism by abusing alcohol. It's genetic. And you can become a heavy drinker, you can become chemically dependent, but that's different than being an alcoholic. And because alcoholism is something that is alive and well without any alcohol in your body at all. You think differently than other people when it comes to your relationship with
right.
booze. But then again, with narcotics like heroin, you can develop addiction by abusing it. It doesn't have to be genetic. So I can see where the Rat Park theory would actually be very true if you're put in the wrong environment and introduced to it. There you go. I think with alcohol, it's probably different. But who am I? I'm just a radio guy.
think about. You say we think differently. Was
yeah.
that learned?
You know, I think it was a combination of learned. I you know, but if you talk to the people that are dyed in the wool, definitely this is genetic only. They're going to say that the thought processes were genetic too. Who knows, right? I mean, Roger grew
right.
up in a healthy environment, And alcohol did something to him that would not necessarily do to his brother, you know. I mean,
right.
Yeah. So we do know, though, that you that the DNA in your brain can be changed. The way you think can be changed. We didn't used to think that. And you're right. We do need to stay away from our old playgrounds and playmates, right? I mean,
yes.
That's kind of common sense, but that kind of goes out the window when you're in your active stuff, right?
Right.
So you have a section in here on intervention, which I'm always I'm always interested in intervention, and there are different ways to intervene. I mean, they're varied as well, right, Suzanne?
Yes, yes. And, you know, one of the ones that I thought was pretty interesting was the love one. What is it? She, I guess her and her husband, Jeff and Deborah J. One of the things I loved about just the way they talk about how they let love kind of be the guiding light for the intervention, and just the way they say it, and I can't remember.
Page 40. Their approach emphasizing love, truth, and compassion. Yeah. It says here they believe the heart of the person abusing substances can hear the spirit of love from their family and friends. During this recognition,
yes, that's what I was looking for.
The person stops listening to their addiction. So they're listening to the love
Isn't
of their family and friends. It is profound. It is profound. Yeah. Because I'm a little schizophrenic, right? I got my addict voice. I've got my healthy voice. I've got the spirit of God voice. Then I've got my supportive voice from my families. And
Yeah.
So that would kind of fly
in. I wanted to use.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was going to say that would kind of fly in the face of the. It would fly in the face of the hardcore tough love method.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And that's why I wanted to implement or to include all the different ones, because, again, you have different parents, you have different family members that may find, you know, tough love kind of, and that is, who's that? Who developed that? Johnson model.
The Johnson model, right?
That's really, you know, what a lot of people see Dr. Drew on TV doing the Johnson model. You know, they bring the person in and then they, you know, everybody's sitting there with their letters and that sort of thing. But there's different ones, and you know, the family member, whoever's planning on intervening. I don't know if you noticed, I think this is the longest chapter, and part of the reason for that is there's so many different ways to intervene. You don't have to just sit by and watch, you know. And the Johnson model is good. And some people say, like with the love first approach, that may not work for people who are hardcore, been doing it for 40 years, you know. Their addiction has been active for 40 years, you know. So
the addict voice, the addict voice is going to outweigh the love voice in that case, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So sometimes the Johnson model works best with that. So, but I wanted to make sure that people had the tools, and I think that the self-care. How families cope, the very first chapter. It's interesting when you talk to people around the globe, they're all, sorry about the noise.
That's okay.
Can you hear that? The motorcycles go by.
Yeah, that's fine.
Busy, busy weekend. When you talk to different family therapists around the globe, that they all have their theory on how you should be talking about it. you know, down in New Zealand, the woman who works at a family drug court down there, she thinks of it as a habit. She doesn't think of it as a disease either. So, you know, there's just so many different theories, so many different ways to approach it. And there's so many different parents out there. So, you know, being able to choose one of these support groups, you know, if it doesn't work and you're not seeing change and you're not getting better, or your child isn't getting better, try a different one. There's a whole ton of them. There's a ton of them in here you can look to help you and your family. But the How Families Cope chapter, I think, is really important, because, you know, having boundaries and taking care of yourself, all of everybody talks about taking care of yourself. Because when you become addicted to trying to fix your child, then that can be I always used to say, you can either help them or hurt them. And if you're overly preoccupied with their way of living, and you're not taking care of yourself, you're no good to them. You know?
Absolutely. Now we got a whole separate problem going on. And, I've known families that have fallen into that, and one of the parents or both, then they started abusing a substance to medicate, what they're going through. And now we got a real mess on our hands, you know.
Let me interject.
Yes, go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, I was just.
I was just going to say, the one of the quotes the person said, "I wish my parents knew not to include me in their drug use because it destroyed my childhood." If I could say anything to parents right now, if you're using, do not include your child in your drug use or alcohol use.
I know a family right now they're raising some youngins. I mean, really, there's an infant, and then there is like a 9-year-old. And the mom and dad are heavy cannabis users. And of course, they're also heavy nicotine users. And they think just because they smoke it outside that their children aren't going to be affected. And I'm seeing a train wreck. I'm seeing a train wreck. And you know, you talk to them and you say, you know, you can't see around the corner. I can see around. And I'm telling you, you are going to destroy yourselves and your children. You know, this is a form, and I get real kind of indignant when it comes to kids. That is a form of neglect and a form of child abuse. It just is. Mm-hmm. You know, and people aren't used to
it. You're not present.
No, you know, right. and then when you are present mentally, you're zoned out, and you know, well, yeah, but it's legal. Well, so is hemlock. I mean, yeah, don't get me going on kids. Wow. So, Suzanne, what are you seeing right now as far as comments on your book, or are you getting any responses? That people are saying this has been helpful for them.
Yeah, I think a lot of parents, what I've seen is a lot of parents wish they had it when their kid was growing up, because, you know, either their child is still using, or maybe they got sober and now, you know, I think that's the biggest thing I hear is, I wish I had it when my child was young.
Yeah.
Because, you know, unfortunately, you talked about doctors earlier, not knowing.
Yeah.
I know when I was doing one-on-one counseling, I had a really hard time finding a doctor who knew about addiction, knew about substance use disorders. And I'd be real nervous about sending them. You know, one girl, she wound up dying. But her doctor was prescribing her benzos and, God, I can't remember, just a whole plethora of different medications, and I, you know, he wound up getting his license taken away, but it was after she died, you know.
Yeah.
She's an addict. She can't control the use of that, you know.
Right.
And I think with more doctors involved now, maybe they're starting to see that, you know, the true nature. But as you and I both know, you know, having been through it ourselves really puts on a different perspective, right?
Right.
You know, I know that if you put drugs, if you put a bunch of alcohol in a room that I'm in, I'm going to crave that. I'm going to see it. I'm going to crave it. I try not to. I mean, I'm someone, I don't keep alcohol in the house because I don't want to have it talk to me, you know?
Yeah.
Just have one sip, have this. Some people can, I don't, I yeah, can't.
Me either. So, I have a friend, Suzanne. I have a friend who used to say, and he used to fly a lot, and he'd read those airline magazines that are in the seats in front of him, you know. And he'd been sober 20 some odd years, and he'd opened up to a page, and there's an ad for Crown Royal, right? And Crown he said, Royal, and it would, yeah. He said it would talk to me. He said it would literally say, you know, go ahead. Go ahead, Ed. It's okay. You know. Yeah. And I get it. Yeah. I get it. I have told people before, and they're shocked. They go, listen. Even with 25 years of sobriety, if you put me in a padded room and you lock me in there, and you put a syringe of meth in the corner and a bottle of Wild Turkey 101, and you leave me in there long enough, and you tell me that I can use that with no consequences and no accountability. At some point, if you don't let me out of that room, there's a good chance, if it's just out of boredom, I'm going to toy with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm going to end up picking
it up. I never thought of it that way.
You know, and I believe the obsession to use and drink has been lifted from me. I believe that's by the hand of the grace of God, after having a spiritual awakening as a result of the steps that I worked. Mm-hmm. But you put me, and so it kind of goes back to Rat Park again, right? If you do put me in the right scenario, I could be in deep weeds, regardless how much I love God.
Right.
And I love God with all my heart.
Right.
But there are certain things I just will not do and will not go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. People should know too, in here, there's a chapter on emergency methods. And that those are things that they can do immediately. Like, for instance, having a card in your wallet, in your home, at where you work. That has all the emergency numbers on it. Make sure you have Narcan if you know your child is abusing an opiate, because it's a Narcan is an opiate reversal, overdose reversal drug. But those are things that are really important to have on hand. And there's a chapter on prevention. Some of those things that you can do with your younger children to help prevent them from picking up a drink or a drug.
Right.
Or that you can do, you know, there's different types of prevention, you know, primary, secondary, tertiary. Tertiary is after they are addicted, but primary is before. And so all of those are in there, primary, secondary, and tertiary prevention.
Can you get where you are? Can a person buy Narcan?
I get it for free.
Yeah.
I think you can now.
I think you can.
Over the counter at the drugstore.
Yeah. I know you can here.
Pharmacy.
I've got one in my glove box.
Yeah.
I haven't had to use it, but I have it just in case. Yeah. We live right down the street from a homeless shelter.
Yeah.
And you never know, right?
Yeah.
The stuff that's coming out now, though, Narcan won't do it.
I know. And so that's real scary. That fly in the face of harm reduction. What do you think about harm reduction now?
You know what? I got to tell you, the jury's not out with me on that yet. I think there's certain forms of harm reduction that I can get on board with. I think other forms of it is just another way of enabling the addict. But I can't say absolutely I disagree or I agree. I can't do that. I think it would be irresponsible because there's some harm reduction that is saving lives. I have a real problem that I know of a place up in Washington State where they provide heroin. They provide the drug. Right. And they provide the syringes and everything. And upstairs is the treatment center. And they've had little success with it. And I do know I do know this. Because I was a meth user and I was an intravenous drug user. If you provide meth for me in a safe place to inject it, I'm still going to be injecting meth on the street somewhere. That is not going to stop me from using dirty needles. It just is not.
Right.
So,
And I'm with you too. We've had harm reduction forever. How it came to be this big, huge explosion of, you know, harm reduction is beyond me because we've always done it. Supervised consumption sites, I think, is what you're talking about, and those are new. Those are real new. You guys out there in Washington legalized all drugs, didn't you?
Not all, but we're right on the cuffs of it. We really are. I think in Washington, I think they psilocybin got legalized. I'm not sure about. I don't think Oregon's reached that yet, but it's on the table. And also on the table is methamphetamine. Wow. Part of me understands the idea of why, you know, the government controlling yet something else. I'm not too in favor of that. But
white-collar drug dealers.
Huh? Yeah, yeah. But the other side of the coin is... This is an epidemic, and you know it's got to stop somehow. I'll tell you this, and then Roger, I'd like you to comment on this. I know that there are certain things that just because they were illegal, kids did not do it, right? And if they had, they may have had the genetic makeup to where they had become addicted, but because it was illegal, they didn't go down that road, and they never did when they grew up. You know, I know this, though, that if you make French fries illegal, some little kid's going to get his older brother to buy them for him. You know, if you make them, you can't buy them unless you're 18, right? They're going to get them. So I don't know. Roger, what do you think of medical assisted treatment or medically assisted recovery? What's your take on that?
I have real mixed emotions about it. Maybe being never exposed directly to it, I can't really say I've experienced it. But I I think that if you're preventing someone from going into DTs or a coma, maybe that's assisted for a moment to get them physically or mentally or something to a point where they can start making some decisions for self-care. But I'm not a proponent of it, but it, like you said, Monty, I don't know. I've got mixed emotions about it. I don't white collar drug dealers. Not, I don't, I think that's as bad as the bad guys on the corner, or maybe worse.
Sure. Because
they look like they're doing the right thing and they're not.
Right. Well, and I hate to say this, but I hate to politicize it, but I think part of this thing is part of the dumbing down of our country. That's a whole nother show. But, you know, if you can get the people to be duh, if you can get them there, then you can get them anywhere.
You know? Well, and I think the white collar, that whole concept of that treatment, I don't think their motive is to help and cure the person. I don't think so at all.
Yeah. 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 There's a song out there called, it's called the Parmesan Song. I don't know if you guys have ever heard it. It was great. It was on one of those talent show things like American Idol. America's Got Talent, I think. And the guy came on and he was singing, I always want more Parmesan, but I'm embarrassed, is how the chorus goes. But then he talks about, instead of Big Pharma, he talks about Big Parma. You know, I would not let Big Parma control me. You know, I go to the Italian restaurant and I'm embarrassed to ask for more Parmesan, but I want more Parmesan. Yeah, so Big Pharma, but they're, you know, Big Pharma's probably not real, but Big Pharma definitely is real. That's a whole nother show too. I don't know. I do know this though. With as many problems and issues that we have around the abuse of substances, there is hope. There is a solution. There is a God that loves you. And there is a way out. And we never give in to the addict. Right, Suzanne? We just don't.
That is right.
Yeah, yeah.
There's always hope.
So how can folks get a hold of this book? Besides, we'll have a link up here at Take 12 Radio, but besides that.
This is only available on Amazon.
Okay. So yep. we'll have
Parents,
a link.
Addicted Children and Hope.
We will have a link up to this. It'll take you to the Amazon page, and you can pick it up. Even if you don't have kids, I really think you should get this book because this is the kind of resources that you can pass on to people. Because I know there isn't a person out there that doesn't know somebody that is going through, you know, a situation right. Where this book's going to be helpful. Yeah. So, Roger, closing thoughts.
God bless you, Suzanne. Thank you for what you've done and the books that you've written. I think the topics that we've discussed today, boy, they need to be heard, digested, discussed everywhere. And I think that, you know, ultimately, I think that love conquers all and God's got a plan for our lives. And if we partake in that, we're going to come out the other side a better person.
Yeah.
So, but I love our discussion today.
Amen. Suzanne, closing thoughts?
There is hope. There's definitely hope. There are interventions. There are things that you can do that will help your child hopefully get into treatment and get better. And like we've been saying over and over, there is hope. You don't ever throw in the towel.
Amen. Amen. All right. Suzanne, what is your website?
I don't have my own personal webpage. I probably should, but I do. I am on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Oh my God, they told me I had to do all these things, so I did. Suzanne L. Thistle, MAMLADC on LinkedIn, Suzanne Thistle on Facebook, and Instagram, I'm naturally dot or period sober.
Okay, good enough. So you can reach out to Suzanne. Remember, her book is on Amazon, and the title is Parents, Addicted Children, and Hope. Okay, our closing song, and you guys, Roger, Suzanne, stick with us here. Our closing song is by Jerry Vandiver. He's a recovery recording artist. And it's entitled Bob and Wendy. Now, Bob and Wendy, well, let's just let Jerry tell you about them, shall we? We'll be back after the song.
Out of a movie script, a picture-perfect suburban relationship. By all appearances, they seem to have a grip on love. Daily I love you's on the telephone. I miss you, honey, can't wait to get back home. Frequent public displays of affection. Two people were never more connected. It's a fairy tale dream with a happy ever after ending, and everyone secretly
wishes they could be like Bob and Wendy. Bob and Wendy have a golden retriever, a son and daughter who are overachievers. Surround sound on their satellite receiver too. A minivan for Saturday soccer games. Both the kids are bringing home perfect grades. Deacons at the church where they were married. Fighting isn't their vocabulary. It's a fairy tale dream with a happy ever after ending. And everyone secretly wishes they could be like Bob and Wendy. It's too good to be true. It is. Still, we were shocked by the news. Irreconcilable differences. Now, Bob's got an apartment that's gated, a girlfriend and another one waiting. Wendy had her first date, but she's taking her time. Playing tennis and just started jogging. Some guy's sending flowers to her office. Bob's going fishing with the boys in Ontario. No one could have made up this scenario. It's not a fairy tale dream with a happy ever after ending. But everyone secretly still wishes they could be like Bob and Wendy. Like Bob and Wendy.
All right, Bob and Wendy, Jerry Vandiver. For more of his recovery-focused music, visit paddlesong.com. All right, a very special thank you to our guest this week, author Suzanne L. Thistle, talking about her new book, Parents, Addicted Children, and Hope. Please click on the link at take12radio.com. It'll take you to Amazon where you can pick up the book. Pass it on. Read it. Pass it on to somebody else that you know could use it. There is hope. We never give up. And, of course, thank you to Roger McDermott from Huntington, California, for joining us today. You guys, thanks so much. And God be with you both. All right.
God bless you guys.
They're smiling back at me. All right, my friends. You guys do not hang up. Listen, everybody, check it out. You can like us, you can hate us, but just talk to us. Our Take 12 Radio website is take12radio@comcast.net. That's T-A-K-E, the number 12, radio@comcast.net. Until our next broadcast, this is the Monty Man along with the rest of the Take 12 Recovery Radio family. And we are wishing God's perfect serenity for you. Bye-bye now.
This has been a broadcast of Take 12 Recovery Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.
Kitty, 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 kitty.